Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
The speaker is not exactly a historian. In fact, truth is, he barely remembers yesterday. But there are things that are valuable in our history, not in and of themselves, but mostly because of what they help us to see in them, where our history can work as a symbol. And looking at the symbol, we can begin to see in it something greater than the ideas that generally dress such ideas. In World War I and II, but I think it was World War II, we were deeply immersed in the European theater, as they called it. Do I have that right? Okay, because if I didn't, I'd just stop the talk here. And it was a world war, which in itself is unthinkable. And there were a lot of different countries involved in it. And that's perhaps part of the idea of the European theater, is that it was staged in Europe, where France, Spain, Italy, of course Germany, the Russians to some extent, there were a host of countries each involved in what they thought was an unfolding drama that, if they could choose properly in the wake of it according to their own interests, they would come out with more than they had when the war began, which in itself, it's so unthinkable. So our story is a brief one about an American who was sent over to work as a spy to help coordinate underground activities and to see that when certain incursions took place, that they would be successful because they would be met with the least resistance and achieve the greatest end. And when our spy was sent over to the European theater, he was told that essentially it's critical. In fact, he was educated prior to his delivery on the English shores. He said it's critical, they told him, it's critical that you know your enemies and your allies. But the problem is that the enemy and your allies are always changing in this theater. And therefore, the only way in which it's possible for you to know the true enemy and who the allies are of the enemy, which are our enemies, is for you to be in constant touch with your field commander. And you're being given this apparatus, this small radio device, by which it is possible for you to check in on a daily basis so that you can keep tabs on all of the various changes that are taking place on this chessboard of conflict called the European theater. So you must do that, or you may betray yourself and fall into the hands of something that you took to be an ally, but that was actually an enemy. We are engaged in a kind of war. And I'm not speaking of a war between countries or between idiologies. I'm talking about a war in which every day you are a casualty. Every day. And the reason that you're a casualty every day in this war, which I'll discuss further in a moment, is because you don't know your enemies from your allies. You take what you think are your allies, and you embrace what they tell you and give you and show you to do, only to find out at the end of those actions that once again you've been betrayed into the hands of your enemy, find yourself imprisoned, hurt, suffering in some way. And then always, and I must stress this, then you always miraculously escape. You know, they let prisoners escape from time to time so that they could track them back to the underground where they were associated so that they could catch the whole cell. Have you never noticed that you always seem to escape the enemy? You do. Ever have a rotten day? Feel like the hordes of all hectum were descending on you, and there was no way out, and you were caught in this bamboo cage and dropped into the dirt or whatever it is that happens, and then all of a sudden the door swings open and you're free. And then you go out, I'm free, and then the next day you're in prison again. You're in that prison of painful thoughts, of sad feelings. So what we're going to study tonight is we're going to study a particular enemy of your soul, a particular enemy of your happiness, if you don't like the word soul. Particular enemy of your contentment, of your ability to be at peace with yourself. And I might add, and the enemy of everyone who is around you when you are in those throes of trying to escape that enemy. And that enemy, we can say it in different ways. I like the one word, anxiety. But anxiety has a number of ways in which it shows itself. Always rushing. A mind that just won't stop. A constant churning activity that a person can't be alone. A person can't be by himself or herself longer than a few minutes unless they're distracted. These are various forms of anxiety. Now, an enemy of anxiety, the enemy called anxiety, has an ally. And this ally is called fear. The truth is that you can't have anxiety, you can't rush, ever, without being afraid. But again, we don't know this. It isn't clear to us at all that every time we are pressed, every time we're rushing through something, every time our mind tells us that we're at risk and that we must act quickly, that we must get what we want, every time, the root of that anxiety is a certain unknown ally it has that we're going to call fear. But we're going to unmask the fear, the ally of anxiety, and we're going to unmask anxiety in such a way that it will be possible after this talk for those of you who wish it and those of you who are willing to work at your wish to never again, as long as you live in this body, be the unwilling and unwitting slave of that which you think serves you. Now, that's the first thing that we have to look at, because you see, when a person's anxious, when they're rushing around, they feel as though they're serving themselves. Don't you? When you're in a hurry, you're serving yourself. This is important. This is what I have to do. I've got this tension because it's very important for me to achieve whatever it is that I have to achieve. Whether it's getting someone to see what I want them to see, for someone to like me the way that I am, for me to get my hands on that which will make me feel better. It doesn't matter what it is. We believe that when we're rushing and anxious, that we are at that moment serving our own best interests, because our best interests are to get rid of this feeling by achieving what anxiety has told us we must achieve. And a person who serves anxiety and its ally fear, a person that serves any negative state like that, doesn't know. You know that this is the most challenging thing that can exist between an individual and a group such as yourself, which is to get you at some level to see that most of the time you're blind. That is the most challenging thing. That is the beginning of change in a person. Not for them to see something new to do, but for them to see that what they have been doing is at the behest of and the compulsion of that which blinds them to what they're in relationship with.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
When a man is anxious, when a woman is rushing, the individual in that state has no idea that they're in that state. They see only what they feel is true about the moment. I'm going to say it again. They see only what they feel is true about the moment. And that one idea, if we could examine it, holds a world of insight and possibility that presently doesn't belong to you. What does it mean? He sees what he feels is true. It means he doesn't see what is at all. What is doing his seeing is his feeling. What is doing her seeing is the way in which she's experiencing the moment, which is something that is being given to her, told to her, that she must be and do and act in a certain way in order to be free. Feelings don't see anything. Feelings don't see anything. The person who has a strong feeling of being worried or anxious or rushing around doesn't see the world as it is. What that person sees is what their mind is showing them they have to do to be free of the feeling they don't want. That's what the person sees, is the promised end of a pain that is in them that they don't know is a pain, because the one who feels that pain feels simultaneously the opposite of it, which is the freedom from it when they achieve what the thought mind says will do it to them. Maybe I better say that again. When a person is rushing, when a person is anxious, they are completely asleep inside of themselves. Completely. What they are asleep in is a special story that their own mind is telling them. And the story that their mind is telling them is predicated on the images that the mind is running before itself, that is telling the mind what is real. It is saying, in some sense, look, you have to resolve this. You've got to get this fixed. You can't leave this like that. If you don't straighten this out right away, something's going to happen to you. Or, even more to the point, when a person is anxious and rushing, they are literally caught in the vain attempt to bring an end to a negative state that is projecting a promised end if the person will embrace the state that makes the promise. So that the person stays locked inside a story that is the fabrication of their own nature, that isn't intending to bring an end to itself, but to actually justify itself through the continuation of that state of mind. Do you know what happens in a person's life so many times is the pain of the story that they are living? And I want to stress this so you understand. The story that has the pain in it, the story that has the anxiousness, the rushing in it, the impatience in it, the stress in it, that story isn't really your story. Doesn't belong to you. It's a story that you've adopted. It's a story that you've taken into you without knowing that you've taken it into you. That story and all of the idea of gaining something, of coming to the end of certain things that seem to make you feel incomplete without it, that story belongs to the world in which you were born. It isn't your story at all, but you have swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. And sinker is a good word at this point. You know what a sinker is when you're fishing? It's what takes the bait into the depths. You're the bait, and the sinker is what draws you down constantly into states of compromising yourself and everyone else. Now, what is it that makes that story so alluring to a human being? Meaning, what is it about feeling anxious, rushed, pressured? What is it about that story that the human being is caught in that makes it virtually impossible for them to recognize what they're doing to themselves and everyone else, by the way? Did you know that when you're anxious and when you're rushing, do you know that you contaminate every human being around you? Do you know that? Because for one thing, what you do is you awaken in them a certain fear, because they can see you're out of control. And if you're anxious, you're out of control. In fact, if you're in any negative state at all, you're out of control. And when another human being meets another human being who's out of control, the first thing that that human being does unconsciously, just as the state of being anxious is an act of unconsciousness, that person wants to protect themselves from something they see as being out of control. Have you ever seen somebody who is angry, frightened, rushing around? What is your relationship? What comes up inside of you when you're around a person like that? First of all, you really don't want anything to do with them. So So there's the first step, isn't it? And it feels like that's an intelligent act on your part to want to have nothing to do with such a person. But what is that act inside of you doing other than what? Not only isolating yourself from the world because you're going to protect yourself when it seems to be pushing you around, but at the same time, don't you, in the very act of that isolation, don't you give the person who's rushing even more things to be afraid of because now they can sense your reluctance? They don't want to be around you. There's another story altogether. There's another story altogether besides this one that produces this fearful anxiety, this rushing around. Because the story, when we're in it, that produces these anxious states and all of this pressure, running, rushing, the story is a simple one. And the reason that fear is the ally of anxiety is because the root reason for rushing is the fear of loss. The root reason for anxiety is the fear of loss. Now, we don't think to ourselves that we're afraid of losing something when we're rushing around. Why? Because we're hell-bent to gain something, to bring ourselves to something, to achieve something. When we're rushing, the idea of being afraid isn't in our mind. The idea that we're in control of ourselves, that we're handling things, that we're getting things done, that's what seems to be the dominant thought when we're rushing. But the fact of the matter is that no one rushes without feeling themselves to be incomplete. You cannot rush lest there is a feeling of being incomplete in you. Because what is it that you rush to do when you're rushing and anxious like that? Aren't you rushing to bring an end to a certain feeling that something isn't there, you don't have this, that isn't right? Yes or no? So when one is rushing, when one is caught up in some kind of anxiety, there is an inherent need inside of them to somehow or other get to the end of that which will get rid of this feeling they have that something is missing from their lives. Now, nothing can be missing from the human life in the moment. Period. Nothing can be missing from the human life in the moment, period. The moment is as full as it can be. This is a fact. Now, is it our experience? Perhaps not. But is it a fact? Yes. Tell me one thing you can add to this moment. You know what you can add to the moment? Your pain. That is all. And the truth is, you don't even add it to the moment. You add it to a kind of an illusory time. You add it to something that doesn't exist in reality at all, but that exists outside of it. So that here is the point, that what we are doing when we're rushing is we are trying to get our hands on that which we have imagined will get rid of this feeling we have of being incomplete. When we're anxious and being unpleasant to be around, whatever the manifestation of that anxiety is, the root of that anxiety is that there is something missing from this moment. And for the most part, the reason that anxious, rushing people cannot show consideration to anything or anyone around them is because they are consumed in this story taking place in their mind that is telling them the cause of the state they're in has something to do with the world that hasn't quite given them what they need. So the endless pursuit is part of this state, this pain of trying somehow or other in desperate measure to complete the story. Because you see, I wouldn't be this way if I didn't have so much to do. Can I ask you, If I wasn't so important, would I be the way that I am? You fill in the blanks however it applies to your behavior. Please tell me, and I ask you to ask yourself this, please tell me, what's it like to live in a story told to yourself, by yourself, for yourself, and nothing else? What's it like? You know what it's like? It's hell. It's lonely. It's fearful. And it's always struggling to get something into the story to change the story, never knowing that the storyteller itself is the cause of the nightmare.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Now, there's another story. A completely different story. It's not unlike, and it's important to get this idea, it's not unlike a king who wants to prepare his son to receive what he's going to give him as he comes of age in the kingdom. Here's a young man, he's coming of age, and the king wants to prepare him to receive what the king wants to give him. And the boy, because of his mind, and the only story that his mind is able to wrap itself around at his age, at the level of his understanding, his mind is thinking in terms of things. It's thinking in terms of what he can have that will make him something, and that after that makes him something, that he'll become something respectable, powerful, like his father perhaps, as he imagines his father to have power. So that's the boy's story. That's your story. You don't see it. I'm telling you, you don't see it. You don't see it. If you saw it, you would never harm yourself again or anyone else by rushing and being anxious. That's the only story he knows. But see, this is the beauty of it. That's his story. But his story is taking place inside of another story that he doesn't know about. And the story that the prince doesn't know about is that the king isn't going to give him things. The king is going to give him the kingdom. The kingdom is greater than the things in the kingdom. Try to see this. See, this is our mind. It's so wrapped up in little things, trying to resolve these problems, fix these people, become someone, look good, see as though, be seen in some light. God, do you you know how much anxiety runs through you because you want to be seen the way you have imagined yourself to be? You've imagined yourself to be wise. You're anxious anytime you talk to people. Every time you talk to people, you're anxious. But you don't see it because you're caught up in the story of trying to prove your wisdom to someone else through yourself. You're anxious every time someone comes over to your home. Every time someone comes to your home, you're anxious. Do you know why? Because you want them to see you as someone who has X, Y, and Z. You're anxious anytime someone comes up and challenges your opinion. Do you know why? Because the image you have of yourself is of someone who is beyond being challenged relative to their opinion. That means that in your mind, unseen because of the story you're in, you have gained something. You have gained the illusion of being wise. You have gained the illusion of being popular, of being handsome, of being beautiful, of being wealthy, of being kind. You have gained these illusions. But that which has given you the illusion that you think you've gained gives you with it the fear that tells you you must be anxious anytime something even comes remotely close to testing that. But you don't know that that's something that you have in your mind come to the conclusion that you have gained or that you must protect. Because what is trying to protect oneself other than trying to protect what one believes one has already gained? Yes or no? That's a terrible story, people. And it's more terrible than I can say because it doesn't have just to do with the way it ruins relationships on this planet between yourselves and the whole planet itself. It isn't just because of that, but because living that story, you can't know the king's story. You can't know the greater story that is the actual foundation, that is the actual life that permits the false story. And what I want to put in your mind here is the idea of concurrent stories. That's the point to this. Because you see, when you're anxious, you only have one story. When you're rushing, there's just the one tale that you've told yourself about what you have to protect or gain or lose. And so I want so much for you to understand that there is never just that story. Never, never, never. And that when you see people and they're unpleasant, their manifestations are gross, their attitudes, when you see people and they're caught up in something, you must understand that what they're caught up is in a story they're telling themselves. And every time you try to punish a person caught up in a story like that, every time you try to get them, you actually cement in them the belief that that story is real because you resist that. And as you resist that, they can do nothing but retreat further and further into this got to prove, got to have, got to be. So now, with the idea of concurrent stories, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story to give you a way to start understanding what to do in these moments where you find yourselves caught up like this. Take a deep breath. What will we make him? Here's a man. We'll put him in his late 30s, and he is a nature lover. He loves nature. He loves to go out, and he likes to climb. He likes to reach high points on mountains and on hills, wherever he is, so that he can enjoy when he gets there. Now, please listen to how simple this is. So that when he can get there, he can enjoy the presence of a story that isn't his own. Isn't that what makes those moments that are true and pristine in nature, that makes them pure? In those instances when you're looking out and there's the eagle soaring, or you look out and you see the sheep leaping from stone to stone, or whatever it is, for that moment you get to participate in the presence of another story, and it is that moment of being in that other story that what makes it so good is what? Here it is. It's not my story. But it's more than that, isn't it? Because even though it's not my story, there's never been a story that's more dear to me, more true to me. I love that story. And that this man loved the presence of another story, which was why he would take himself up into the mountains. But of course, he didn't understand this so much. But he had a right heart. He was willing to have let life show him the truth to some degree of himself, which you aren't. Gosh. Do you know how many times life tells you the truth about yourself and how many times you bat it away? And after batting it away, how badly you want to forget what you call that unpleasant experience where you saw for a moment that you were serving something that was killing you and that was hurting everyone else, where you actually could see certain things, and how fast you wanted to get rid of the person who made you see that, how badly you wanted to be free of that condition that you said you'll never go through again because of what it showed you about yourself. So you throw away these marvelous moments in which life, in its mercy, brings you the opportunity to see that you have the wrong ally. That you are engaged in a relationship with your enemy, not your friend. And this man was beginning to learn this, which is why this story takes place for him. Because that's the next thing I want to tell you. You know, this greater story, this greater story that is the true ground from which all stories come, this greater story, it wants you to have it as your story. Yes. This greater story wants you to be in it. It wants to be your story. But your present story prohibits that. Even in the moments where the seams, if you will, of these two stories touch each other. Because for a split second, you know, when you see your own emptiness, when you see what a wreck you are, how anxious you are, how caught up you are in the world, when you see that for a moment, that means for a split second, this other story has touched your story. Otherwise, you wouldn't see it. And when it touches what has been your story, you mustn't get the brick and mortar out and try to seal it the way you do so that you don't have to have that unpleasant experience again. You have to say, ah, oh, and you will. You say, oh God, this hurts. This is terrible. What I have become is terrible. It is. Because there's no room in your life other than the characters that fit in your story. And they must behave the way they're supposed to behave, and they must do and be everything that you need them to be and do, or what? Or you throw them out of your story.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
And this man, he was blessed because he couldn't hide from himself anymore the story that he'd been telling himself that he didn't know he'd been telling himself. I want to get that back into your mind. The story that he'd been telling himself that he didn't know he'd been telling himself. It's like being born with a certain... You're born into a storybook world, and I'm not talking about yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay. You're born into a storybook world whose every page is filled with the idea of producing a sense of yourself through some form of an idea or idealized image. A story unravels, and each time the story unravels, the solution in this world is just to turn the page as though what took place at that episode, that point in your life, like it didn't have any meaning. Just flip the page. That's what the mind does. The mind is a page flipper. That's exactly what it is. And each page it flips has new images in it because the world is changing and you're getting rid of the things that were on the other page. And as they look at the new page, now the mind has something new to identify with, and it's right back in a new story, except for one thing. It has to keep the images on the page. It must protect itself at all costs. And our hero, he was ready for a change. And the point of all this is when the story, when the two stories begin to show each other as being possible and true, that's when the great story presents opportunities and ways in which to begin to make changes in your life. And this is what happened to him. So he's up in the high ground and he looks down. And here's a man, and he's coming through a valley. And at first, our hero doesn't take any notice at all of this man who's coming through the valley, because when you're up on a high plane, you can see all kinds of things. And keep in mind, if your mind can do it, that the story, that both characters and everything in this story all belong inside of you. The fellow up in the high plane, the fellow lower, and everything else. And as he's continuing his climb, our hero, he happens to hear a sort of a strange sound, and he looks back, and off to the left, there's a great cloud of dust. And lo and behold, there's a herd of buffalo rushing up the canyon towards the direction where the man he just saw was standing. And it's pretty sheer canyon. And he thinks, oh, brother. And he tries to whistle. He tries to get the attention of the fellow. Have you ever seen those movies where something terrible is about to happen and they're waving like this and the guy goes, you know, hi. And that's what the fellow down there did. Like, they didn't have any problem at all. You know, he waved back and the guy's going like this and goes, yeah, hi. And so the fellow thinks, well, there's nothing I can do, when all of a sudden, out of the corner of his eye, on the other side of this canyon, he looks, and here comes two full-grown grizzly bear mothers with their cubs standing on their feet. You know, they're about 9 feet high, because they see this fellow walking toward them away from the buffalo stampede. And he whistles away, and the fellow waves back at him like that. Well, if that wasn't bad enough, now, over there on the side ledge, he sees there's a cougar. And the cougar is ready to pounce on the fellow who, on the left is the buffalo stampede and on the right is the mad bears coming at him. But do you think that's all? No, it is not all there is. Because on the other side of the canyon, a rock slide had started. Big trouble, don't you think? Well, our hero watches this and he thinks to himself, well, this fellow is just doomed. I mean, there's nothing that can happen that's good here. When, as time unfurls, and it does, boy, he could just, things kind of slow down when you see something like that happening. When, all of a sudden, the fellow, surrounded by the buffalo, the cougar, the bear, and the rock slide, he actually walks up over to the cougar and says something to the cougar. And the cougar goes, meow, and starts purring like that, and brushes up against the fellow. And then he walks over to the bears and he whispers something in the bears' ears, and the bears get down on their all fours and they all kind of lay down there together. He looks over the buffalo stampede, and the fellow walks right out in the buffalo stampede, and the stampede just splits, just absolutely splits, just leaves him standing. That fellow said something. And our man is thinking to himself, what is it on earth is this fellow doing? But that's not the end of it, because there's still a rock slide. Fellow walks over to the place where the rock, listen, this is important, actually walks toward the rock slide. You'll understand this one day. And says something as the rock slide heads down to consume him. And just like the buffalo, the rock slide actually separates and just comes to a dead stop. And the valley is in perfect peace. The cougar and the bear and the buffalo and the rock. Perfect peace. Well, the problem that this fellow has, our hero, is that he's way up there and he doesn't know what. He's just dying because he thinks he saw something that was beyond belief. And actually he did, is what you'll understand. So now he's in a rush to get down to find this fellow and ask him what he did. Well, it took him 3 days, but he finally caught up at the mouth of the campsite where the fellow was, and he ran up to him and he said, "You know, I've been nothing but rushing to get down here. I want to know what it was that happened, because I saw you. You were surrounded on four sides, and it looked to me as though there was no hope. What happened? What did you say to the cougar? What did you say to the bear? What did you say to the buffalo? What did you say to that rock slide that made everything suddenly change the way it did?" And the man said, "Oh," he said, it's something that I've been working on for 50 years. He said, "I'll be glad to tell you it. But it's not magic," he said. "I want you to understand, it's not magic." He said, "And if you're interested, you can come with me and we can go back into the hills there and we can study together. We can learn something of it." He said, "All I did and all I ever need to do when I find myself in situations like that is I simply say, I'm taking myself out of this story. All I have to do. But then I have to actually do it. I remember," he said, "that there is another story going on all the time. And I have to remind myself quite frequently that there's another story going all the time, because when I take myself out of the story that has the stampeding buffalo, when I take myself out of the story where the bear are approaching me or the cougar's getting ready to leap, and in case your mind isn't making the connection, when I catch myself trying to be something, when I catch myself trying to prove something, when I catch myself hoping to somehow or other get the attention of someone, when I catch myself lying to myself in order to hide from myself where the stories brushed and touched and showed me the truth of myself, when I catch myself like that and I can remember that I can take myself out of that story, what I have to enter into at that moment is something that there's a great part of me that wants nothing whatsoever to do with. He said, because you see, what I have discovered is that, and these are words now, so try to stay with me, is that the field of life is not the same as the objects in it. And that the field is always in perfect peace. Meaning, in this instance, that when we look out at life, when we look at our own thoughts, in fact, do it right now while you're listening. You can look out the window. We never see the field. We never see that which, that story that holds all things. What we see are the things we want to hold in the story. Can you understand that idea? See, this is, and maybe it's a stretch for you. It probably is, and maybe it's necessary. But when you can tell inwardly yourself, because you feel that rushing, that nervousness, that anxiety, when you can wake up just for a split second and realize that here I am, the reason that I'm feeling like this is because I'm in the story of myself. That's why I have enemies. That's the only reason a human being has fear. Because he's in the story of himself. But that story is just a tiny bit of the whole story. And when you can begin in this instance to be able to look out and recognize just anywhere, you do it right now while I'm talking to you. The speaker is doing it all the time. There's a completely different story in the whole field than there is to that which is in the field that gives you the feeling of yourself. Completely different. Come wide awake. Come wide awake and be aware of the field. Be aware of the whole. You see, the awareness of the field, the awareness of the whole, the awareness is a field of shared presence. Awareness is a field of shared presence. To be aware of the field, meaning to bring yourself into the moment, is what it means to take yourself out of the story of yourself. But you're not comfortable in this field of shared presence because there's no familiar you pursuing something by which to know yourself through or to fear the loss of. And I have to bring the talk to an end. I've run out of time already. But try to understand that when you can simply bring yourself back into this, into the field of the present moment, call it what you will, when you can look out and see this broad set of relationships that you normally enjoy in nature and recognize that your awareness of that is not outside of the whole of that presence, you know another story exists. What you have to learn to go through is the sense of emptiness that comes over you when you enter into this field of shared presence. But that emptiness is a lie that the story that yourself has woven for yourself tells you. It says there's nothing here for me. I tell you that everything is there in that field of awareness. Everything is there in that moment if you're willing to enter into it, because that story has no beginning and it has no end.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.